What is up, everybody? Dr. Joe Armstrong here, and I am super excited to tell you that we have a sponsor, and that sponsor is Medgene. It's a new day in animal healthcare, and Medgene is wide awake. Medgene is the first USDA-licensed producer of prescription platform vaccines. Medgene's prescription platform vaccines help veterinarians in the swine, cattle, deer, and rabbit industries respond faster and more efficiently. Learn more about Medgene's prescription platform vaccines at MedgeneLabs.com. That's MedgeneLabs.com. Or better yet, follow Medgene on Facebook and LinkedIn. Medgene, it's a new day in animal healthcare. What is up, everybody? Dr. Joe Armstrong. We are going to split up a couple of these episodes and what we're talking about today, because it's a lot of information and there's a lot to get through. And I think if I talk for the entire time that it would take, you would fall asleep for sure. So we're going to break this up into a few different episodes. The overall topic is specific biocontainment and biosecurity recommendations with regard to H5 influenza. There are a lot of biosecurity materials out there, but in my mind, a lot of times they are not specific enough to this situation to be overly helpful. They are a great place to start, but I'd like to share what I think about specific topics so that you have some action items and things to do specifically related to H5 influenza. I'm going to give you some things to think about and things that I recommend, and we're going to explain the why behind them as well. So they're not just recommendations that are floating out there without any backing to them. There are definitely going to be some things in here that seem foreign to what we are used to. There's going to be a lot of changes, and I think that's kind of the point. I think H5N1 influenza in dairy cattle is going to permanently change pieces of our industry, and some of that is going to be biosecurity related. So in my mind, I think I've got this broken down into three parts. It may be less, it may be more, depending on how the time works out. But all of this came from sitting down and thinking through what truly is most important for protecting farms, and on top of that, how to contain the virus once it's on a farm. So if you are impacted, if your herd is infected with H5N1, how do we keep it there as much as possible and not allow the spread of that virus to the shared ecosystem as much as we can and to our neighbors down the road, which may have dairy or poultry or another species? So before we get going too far, there's a couple big concepts that are going to be right at the forefront of a lot of the decisions that I am taking into account when we make these recommendations. One of the big ones is that our goal when we're talking about H5N1 or H5 influenza viruses is to limit the opportunities the virus has to change, either by mutation or by reassortment with other viruses that would allow it the opportunity to become more deadly or more infectious to different species. So the goal is to limit the circulation of the virus, because the more it circulates, the more opportunities it has to change. And the change can be virulence, which is deadliness, in the species it's in already, or it can acquire changes that would make it more infectious to other species or even more infectious to the same species. We don't want to give the virus that opportunity. And the more it circulates, the more opportunities it has to change. This is what the CDC is talking about, and USDA and FDA, when they're talking about the sequencing of the virus and looking for specific changes that would allow the virus to be more infectious to humans and or increase the chances of there being human-to-human transmission. Now, I think what doesn't get talked about enough, because we focus on the human side a lot, but the changes that happen to the virus don't just impact humans. The changes that happen to the virus, the more we allow it to circulate, can impact the species that it's already in. So if this virus is already in cows and it circulates and has the opportunity to change by mutation or by reassortment with other viruses, it could become more virulent or cause more severe illness or deaths in cows. It's not just something that we worry about for humans. I don't think we talk about that enough. The more that the virus circulates and the more opportunities it has to change, the higher the probability becomes that the virus will become worse for cows. All right, next big concept that we need to talk about, and that is what happens with influenza virus in a population if it continues to see new hosts that have not seen the virus yet. And that is the scenario that can be in play if you continue to bring animals that are unexposed and naive to a premise that is impacted, whether that is officially positive or impacted and not testing. So once influenza A or H5N1 gets into a population, it circulates in that population until that population seroconverts and has enough antibodies and immunity and resistance to that virus that it can no longer circulate. For that process to happen like it should and take the least amount of time, we cannot add new animals to that population because now the virus has a new set of animals to infect and to circulate in. So if you continue to add new animals before the entire population that's there has a chance to seroconvert and create antibodies, you are creating the perfect scenario for an endemic situation where that virus will not ever leave because it is continuing to find new animals to infect. If that happens long enough and those new animals continue to flow in and that virus continues to circulate in those new animals, the virus itself has more opportunities to mutate and more opportunities to reassort. So in theory, if you continue that cycle long enough of continuing to bring new animals in without ever letting the population seroconvert, you can set up a situation where the virus could change enough to then go back to the original population because it's different enough that it can now infect them again. So when we talk about quarantines and not allowing animals to move and not allowing animals to leave a premises, it's also just as important to not allow naive populations to come onto the farm, because now all we've done is potentially extend the time it's going to take for the entire population to seroconvert and create antibodies or become resistant to that virus. One of the things that we do not have enough data on yet and we have discussed but don't really know what to do with is the flow within a dairy itself. So if we think that raw milk is one of the main ways this is moving, which we do, and that the parlor may play a key role, what we need to look at is within a farm itself, do we have a situation where we have a naive group of animals that continually gets added to a group where the virus is circulating? If we look at a farm, a dairy farm, where is the most likely group to be naive or have not seen the virus if the parlor plays a big role? Well, the dry cows are often housed separate. Sometimes they have separate personnel, but members of that dry cow community continually move into the lactating cow community in a continual flow pattern like we were just describing. So potentially, if dry cows are housed separate enough and they have separate personnel and separate equipment and everything is separate, that could be considered a naive population that has not seen the virus. Where if it is circulating in your lactating population and the parlor plays a key role, you are now setting up a situation where you could have a continual flow from the dry cows to the lactating herd, and you could be extending the time it takes for your herd to clear the virus because you're constantly adding naive animals to a group that is currently circulating the virus. The same scenario exists when we talk about heifers. So if you've got springing heifers and they have been housed separate with separate equipment and separate personnel and they don't see the virus, you can trickle them into the lactating herd and have continual flow of naive animals to a population that is currently infected. And that is the exact scenario that we don't want if we want to allow the population to seroconvert and to get over this disease at the herd level as quickly as possible. So like I said, those scenarios, especially the ones on farm where we potentially have an infected population and a naive population that interact, we don't have a whole lot of data on that, and we don't have enough information to make solid recommendations yet without completely disrupting the flow of business on a dairy. Okay, let's transition to what you can do. So like I said, this is part one. There'll be multiple parts to this because there's just a lot to go through. And I don't want to just spurt out this information without any backing to why it's important. So today we are going to cover waste milk. We're going to talk about the milk house, the parlor, and other raw milk holding areas, and driveways. Those are the three things that we're talking about today. So when we talk about waste milk, knowing that raw milk is the substance that has the most virus in it, we need to be careful about how we're handling it, how we're discarding it. So we should not be feeding raw waste milk to any animals, including cats, dogs, and wildlife. And if you're going to dispose of waste milk, we really, really need to pasteurize it before we put it into manure storage. Manure storage, especially open pits or lagoons or whatever you're using, that is the environment and the shared ecosystem and is accessible by all sorts of wildlife. Now, here's where I think the farmer ingenuity, creativity is going to come into play, because sometimes that waste milk can be a decent volume if you need to discard it. And I'm saying pasteurization, but what I really mean is heat treat. We do not need to be gentle with this milk in any way if we're going to be putting it into manure storage anyway. You don't have to worry about it coagulating or getting too hot. We just need to heat treat it. So I am confident that there are all sorts of people out there that can come up with a way to do that, knowing that it's not going to be food for anything. It just needs to get into manure storage safely, which means it just needs to be heat treated and it doesn't have to be gentle in that process. All right, let's move on to the milk house, parlor, and other raw milk holding areas. Okay, so we know raw milk is the most infectious media, the most infectious substance for H5N1. And it's the highest risk for transmission between cow to cow, cow to wildlife, and cow to people. So knowing all that, in combination with knowing that we are producing food for human consumption, we need to treat the milk house, the parlor, and other areas where we handle raw milk with respect. And what do I mean by that? That means that the milk house should probably be treated as a restricted area, meaning only personnel essential to the operations in the milk house should go in the milk house. Now, I was in practice, and I know that the milk house is one of the only ways to get on some farms. You walk through the milk house to get to the barn. You do all sorts of things in the milk house, including just trying to stay warm on really cold days, washing your hands, sometimes spraying off your boots, which you probably shouldn't do in there anyway, because remember, we're producing food. But I am guilty of all those things, 100%. The milk house is where I got water. It's where I hung out when I was cold. It's where I sometimes spread my boots off because it was easiest and I probably should not have. It's where I wash my hands sometimes in the hand sink. There's all sorts of things that happen in the milk house. I'm saying that ideally, all those tasks that are usually done by non-essential milk house personnel, such as hand washing, boot washing, washing of non-milk house equipment, should probably be done in a different location. And I'm saying that if you can, people should enter your farm not through the milk house, through some other way. And really, it should only be people that have to go in there should go in there. Knowing that raw milk is the substance that has the most virus in it, it also might not be a bad idea to enter the milk house and exit the milk house with a foot bath in place, just to make sure if there is raw milk on the floor, we are not tracking that to other locations. Now, the foot bath itself might seem like a lot for the day-to-day. I still don't think it's a bad idea for the day-to-day, but it's definitely the ideal when it comes to the day-to-day normal operations around the parlor. When it becomes a necessity is when your farm is infected. We know raw milk has the most virus in it, and we need to try to contain that within the area where most of the raw milk is as much as possible. Now, the other place that we handle the most raw milk on a dairy is in the parlor. So when we're talking about the parlor, we need to treat that the same way. So we know raw milk is there. We know it's present. We would ideally only have essential parlor personnel in the parlor. Anybody else that doesn't really need to be in there shouldn't be in there. And the same conversation with a foot bath applies to that scenario as well. Now, some dairies have raw milk in other areas, like the calf barn. If you're going to transfer milk to the calf barn and then you're going to pasteurize it before you feed it to calves, you're going to have raw milk in the calf barn at some point. And that is the exact same thing. We treat it just like we would treat the parlor or the milk house because we know that that raw milk has the most virus in it. So only essential personnel in those areas and ideally in and out with a foot bath. All right, last topic for today. We've talked plenty so far about a lot of things, and then I will cover the rest in part 2 and 3. So the last one I want to talk about today is the concept of having a clean driveway. Now, this one can be a little contentious because there are a wide variety of entrances to a dairy. I've seen them all. I really have. From the most immaculate to the sloppiest one. I've seen them. I've driven in them. I know what the weather can do and how it depends on the season. I get it. But when we're talking about what is transferring on equipment, this isn't an aerosolization problem. This is a problem of mechanically moving infected materials from farm to farm, whether that's manure or raw milk, whatever it is. If your driveway is clean, your equipment stays clean. So what I'm saying is that your driveway should be kept free of mud and puddles as much as possible. And hear me when I say that, as much as possible. It's probably close to impossible to eliminate mud and puddles during certain times of the year, but we need to do the best we can. And then the same thing applies to manure. We have to keep that driveway free of manure as much as possible. Any manure, spilled feed, or spilled milk should be cleaned up immediately to try to avoid any contamination of vehicles that are coming on and off of your farm. We're going to come back to this conversation a little bit as we talk through a lot of the other things that we're going to get to in the next couple parts of this series when we talk about biosecurity and biocontainment related to H5N1 influenza. Just as a teaser, things coming up on the list are livestock transportation equipment, dead stock, farm-related deliveries, manure hauling equipment, manure hauling itself, manure handling and feed handling, professional services that come onto your farm, both those that have direct animal contact and those that do not, shared personnel, household biosecurity for your workers and yourself, personnel that work with livestock, dedicated parking areas, and then specifically talking about cats and dogs and wildlife. So that's what's coming up in the next few pieces of this series. Please watch for that. As always, if you have comments, questions, scathing rebuttals, those can go to the moosroom@umn.edu. You can also call me 612-624-3610. Please check out our website, extension.umn.edu. Thank you, everybody. I'll catch you next episode.